Welcome back to BSA by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare, educational, and research facilities through expert design and insight. I'm your host once again, Brian Moore. This is another episode in our mini-series celebrating BSA's 50th anniversary. In this episode, we're going to do a case study on BSA's involvement with the Indianapolis International Airport and how a firm known for creating spaces in healing, learning, and discovery ended up working on an international airport. There's no better person to talk about that with than Don Altmeyer, who was a guest just a few episodes ago and the principal in charge of the airport project. Don Altmeyer was a founding principal of BSA and has retired after 40 years. Don held every position in the corporation and served as principal in charge for healthcare and university-based research projects, as well as overseeing the planning and implementation of the Midfield Terminal at the Indianapolis International Airport. Don graduated from the University of Cincinnati with a Bachelor of Science degree in architecture. He was a fighter pilot with the United States Air Force from 1971 until 1977. Welcome back to the show, Don. Thanks for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be here. Oh, it's a great company, and I'm proud to come back and see you.
Well, we're happy to have you. As you know, we're doing this mini-series on BSA's 50th, and I wanted to talk to you specifically about the Indianapolis International Airport. Just how did the firm known for healthcare projects get involved with an airport project?
I always laugh if people have that question. I said, well, the issues are the same, parking and waiting. So there's more to it than that.
Sure.
It's a complex thing. How did I end up in this situation?
Yeah.
And it's pretty simple in a way if you get right down to it. My kids went to school with Mary Goldsmith's kids, so I knew Mary Goldsmith. It wasn't like political connection. It was little dads.
Just in school. Yeah.
And we were literally talking one day when they announced, well, we're going to do this airport. And I said, I hate this because it's going to be one of these big firms coming in, blah, 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 leave out Indiana. Our firms will work for that firm. But we won't learn anything in our own industry. And the mayor said, I don't want that to happen. How can we do it differently? And so I thought about it. Actually, then I saw a thing for an aviation planning conference, and I went to it in New Orleans. And
when was this?
This is in 99.
Yeah.
And probably April 99. And then when I came back, I heard a concept there. It wasn't something we invented, called project definition. And basically the message of project definition compared to just jumping in and designing a project. And the airport had a master plan. The master plan was a midfield terminal. Basically, they built two parallel runways with this terminal in mind. That was the master plan. That's all, as far as they'd gone. And what one consultant in New Orleans talked about was, how do you plan for a project like this that's going to last years? Airports just don't pop up overnight.
Right.
How do you control budgets? And at that point, Denver had set the standard for blowing the budget and blowing the schedule and blowing the scope. And so everybody talked a lot about Denver. And essentially, it was, how could we have not had Denver? And the way I describe project definition is sort of measure twice, cut once.
Right.
And so I drew a diagram of how you could do this, how you could bring in the best planners and plan this facility, end up with a product that could be created and completed locally. We almost got that done, because I'll say at the end of the job, about 88% of the work was done by Indiana companies.
Wow.
And it had a high diversity level, too, in terms of NBE and WB companies. But sent that to the mayor, and I got a call from the guy that's sort of his political go-to guy, Mike Wells, who happened to be the president of the board, airport board. And he said, I understand you sent something to the mayor. And I do him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we need to meet. He had it. He made some marks on this diagram.
Great.
And he said, you need to make these changes, send it back to the mayor. Okay. And he said, who would run this? I said, well, that's the whole point. I mean, you would, it's somebody that, frankly, local. And he said, you could do it, couldn't you? I said, well, I guess. And the mayor knew, and Mike knew, that I had been a fighter pilot.
Yeah.
Because the mayor's kids had actually ridden on the BSA plane. But he knew that I was a pilot, and in Mayor Goldsmith's mind, that qualified me. And plus, BSA was the largest firm in town.
Right.
Well, this email came in, and it said, regarding airport, you're in. All Wells.
That's it. Just, that's it. You're in.
That was it. And this was early May.
Right.
So I called Mike. He said, yeah. And he and Goldsmith, like this and like this. Yeah. He said, we need to meet the mayor. So we go to the 25th floor. And I was familiar with the building because I was on the board that actually owned the city county building for a long time. Met him there, and he said, this guy thinks, and the mayor was not running for office again.
Right.
This is 99, and the election was November 99. And he said, this guy thinks we can make all the decisions before he leaves office. I said, yeah, I don't think there's a way.
Right.
Because, first of all, it's a public job. We have to bring these consultants. We have to advertise. We have to do these kinds of things. Well, get going. That was basically what it was. And so, and the good part was the airport had a consultant, B. Fisher Associates, financial consultant, planning, financial planning, traffic planning consultant. And they brought in a fellow who was probably the number one airport expert, a guy named Gene Lewis, who's since passed away. He had a lot to do with planning the Tampa airport with the people movers. And
oh, yeah.
He worked on so many airports. It was unbelievable. Well, he was my resource. And he liked my diagram. He liked the idea. And he would tell me, these are the people. And he said, we don't want companies. We want people. And I know who these people are and which company's in. And so we invited them, RFPs. I had to write all these RFPs. And the big one was actually the terminal planning consultant. But we had baggage, we had fuel, actually had aircraft movement.
So you're just bringing the best of the
environmental.
Best
so what we literally did, we had the best of the best. So we went through this process and then got everybody on board. And had a big meeting one day. Our cost estimator was from Scotland. The baggage guy was from the East, but he was also getting David Booth, who fixed Denver.
Really?
It was his United, loved him. That was the other thing I heard. Well, when you meet these airline reps, they are tough. The guy from United will eat you alive. I said, you know, I work in a profession where my clients carry knives and they're licensed to use them.
So I guess he's not going to be carrying a knife.
Right. But we convened this thing, and it was a period from, we kicked it off in September of 99. I actually went through an election. The mayor, Mayor Peterson,
yep,
won. But we put together the project definition package. Everything you see out there was basically, you know, you've got them somewhere in the files here.
Right, right.
467-01.
Yeah.
You can actually see everything in the plan. Now, at that time, security, and this is pre-9/11.
Right.
So it was sort of the old-fashioned security.
Mm.
And so some of the things did change. Anyway, it was put together. We had cost estimates. One of the things we had reconciled, we had three cost estimates. The terminal planning consultant, the URS at the time, specifically Nabil Jamal was the guy that, and he just hired, just completed the new airport in Israel. And he's Egyptian. He was, you know, one of these kind of cool guy.
Right.
And, he led the URS team. And anyway, they had an estimator. We had an estimator and the airlines. The airline reps sat in with us as well because the airlines had to approve the project in terms of the.
A lot of cooks in the kitchen, right?
Oh, it was amazing. Anyway, we got it. They agreed to it so far. And actually, Lee Fisher was involved in doing the, you know, we were working on costs, and Lee Fisher was, you know, what is the cost per passenger? Mm-hmm. What is the cost of landing fees? And with FedEx in there, FedEx really paid for the airport anyway, the terminal with their landing fees. But, and FedEx was part of the meetings as well. But they, what the airport actually costs is $1.50 per passenger.
Really?
It was about an $8.50 per passenger charge in the old terminal. And the agreement that Wells basically worked out with the airlines says we're going to be as close to 10, but not 11, as we can get cost per passenger. And they said, you know, basically, you know, if they pay, you know, at O'Hare, it's like 16. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, they also, there's a passenger facility charge that the FAA allows them to charge, and then just the other revenues, parking and so on, how they, you know, get paid for, landing fees, you know, what's FedEx, you know, landing fees going to do. Mm-hmm. That's what Fisher did to prove that this thing would work. And but you had a new mayor, Bart was the mayor, and we didn't change anything. But I will say that the day, and obviously a new board, a fellow named Lacey Johnson became the president, mm-hmm. Democrat, and then Mike was still on the board, but the two of them were my client then. Mm-hmm. Lacey was a lawyer, a lobbyist. He didn't know anything about construction. Mike Welch ran the development company, mm-hmm. so he knew a lot about construction as well. Anyway, we come up with this thing, and basically we had a meeting in May of 2000, which was sort of our deadline, and to make a decision. And the airlines agreed. I was in an event with Mayor Peterson, and I walked in, and he came from about as far across the room as you get. He says, "What happened today?" And I said, "You've got an airport." He said, "You shake their hands?" I said, "No, but Lacey did."
Oh, yeah.
It was just like, oh, it was really cool. There were some great moments. Well, then the project, you know, was sort of going along, and then and rightfully so, the mayor hired John Kish. Kish had been with the state. He'd run the Department of Administration and Evan Bayh's administration mm-hmm. all the way through. And Jay McQueen had worked with him there. But Kish obviously knew financing, bonding, politics, mm-hmm. all those things that it took. But he was way behind the eight ball, and then 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
That really complicated.
Yeah.
And what we were able to prove is that the concept was flexible enough that we could adapt everything into 9/11, the same mm-hmm. square footage. Then I went through the selection of the lead architect. HOK got the job. And they, of course, immediately tried to change everything. And the good part was the airlines braced their feet and said, "No, this is the concept we want, and here's the reason we want it." Our first estimate of what they had done was miles over budget. Okay. So we were able to use that, and I'd also hired a couple of guys that were airport guys. That's when CSO mm-hmm. came in. And obviously Schellinger was pretty close to the mayor and all that too. And so they did a great job. And they formed a other little alliance company, you know, a couple other companies in there, but it was CSO all the way.
Yeah.
And they just did a magnificent job. I've got a ton of respect for and the way they did the project, the team they put on it, and they really controlled the design, got it back in scope, and that's basically our role that went from me being the lead to Kish being the lead, and I was over here, and bringing up these people, and obviously the architects theoretically reported through me to yeah. Kish, and it was a fascinating relationship. We moved into a building, had one building, all the production was done in one building out there, was hired as CM. On the air side, mm-hmm. Turner on the land side.
Yep.
And Turner and Hunt had people there in that building, CSO, and the structural engineering, Thornton Tomasetti was hired just because of the spans and so on, but FRP was hired as to do structural peer review. FRP did the peer review on the schematics and so on, and then they flipped. But Thornton Tomasetti did a great job, and FRP did a great job out there too. Mechanically, it was Siska Hennessy out of New York, and they did some really neat engineering. And the local circle and a whole bunch of people were teamed up with Siska Hennessy. So, I mean, these were some big name companies out there that were putting this thing together.
Yeah.
But it all came back to the project definition. We always had this document. It wasn't just a picture. I mean, it was a set of drawings
right.
that had been produced.
And those were yours. Those are your original concepts.
That was the original. Yeah. Well, and, you know, the URS had developed them, and we, you know,
yeah.
we had it, all the engineering concepts, everything was in there. Now, what had changed was 9/11 changed security.
Yep.
TSA was created, and so, you know, you had to split it up, and that's where this big space came from as well. And, you know, the HOK gets credit for that. That's really the only thing they changed. It was they created the big space, the Civic Plaza, which yeah. was a terrific thing. And, you know, and they and Siska also had the experience to imagine that skylight, which is made in Germany and brought here and put together here. They did a good job. I mean, they just flat out just built the building. Wilhelm did an awful lot of the work. They poured all the concrete. And I think they set the steel as well.
Like you kind of said, you know, the idea of bringing and having what at the end there was 88% that were Indiana-based companies. And I know that was some of the motivation, but did some of this just go back to the fact that you were a pilot and you had an affinity for that?
I mean, why the airport?
Yeah.
Well, it was fascinating. Number one, I knew the language.
Right.
All these people in the room, I'm the only person ever flown certainly a high performance airplane.
Right.
But I'm probably the only one that actually used the words taxiing position and hold, you know.
Right. You actually knew the lingo, right?
But it made a difference, and for sure. But, you know, as far as the time that it took for me, in the project definition phase when I was in charge, obviously there was more, but I still worked in my job.
Right.
So, we were working on a couple of critical care units down at Methodist, Todd Berger, and then we were working on that building, the laboratory building,
right,
at the same time. And so it wasn't like a full-time job for me. Now, as it went, the people that in CNN, transportation consulting, you know, Rich Potasinac and some of these people, they were out there full-time.
Right.
And so they had to be. And but they really ran the project. Everybody reported through Ridge to Kish. There was an attitude to that project that was never, there was never a bad day on that project, I would say. Before the big CM meetings, and you had to bring every issue. Every issue had to come to that meeting, and Jay was chair. And you could use any word you wanted, words with K's in them, things like that. And you say, you're holding us up, none of that happened.
Open.
None of that happened in the CM meeting. When they came in, either had a resolution or it was an open item that was continuing to be discussed next week, the next session with Jay. And
how long were those meetings?
Well, three or four hours.
Yeah.
Depends on the agenda. And Jay kept the agenda and Jay kept the notes. And it was, everybody there was the decision maker.
Yeah.
And if CSO owed somebody, something, they called it out there. It wasn't going to be going that meeting. They could say it in the meeting that CSO's getting the shop drawings. They're still working on the shop drawings. They couldn't give it that usual, you guys are holding us up with those shop drawings.
Right.
You hear all
right.
the time. And obviously there was changes on the project that developed, but that was all handled like business.
Yeah.
And we had a contingency, and obviously Kish had to prove when we hit the contingency. But we had the finance people working for us, a fellow who's since passed away, and Kim Fain. They did all of the financial. And let me come back and say that 88% wasn't done by one company. We had 106 consultants.
Wow.
But they had individual contracts. Mm. And that's the part that's hard to explain. And everybody, if there were associate architects working with CSO, they had their own contract. So as soon as they sent their bill in, basically Kim Fain would check everything out before they met with Kish. And if it was approved there, it went to the board, assuming approval there, people were getting paid within 60 days of doing the work.
Wow.
Compared to if everybody was working for the big company, and this actually happened at first, one of the minority companies was assigned HOK, and they were getting paid 6 months later.
Yeah.
Which is killed a small company.
Sure.
But everybody who had all those consultants had direct contracts, and they got paid as soon as their bill was, if their bill was legitimate.
Right.
They get paid in a timely manner, which just saves companies.
Yeah, it does.
And that was so critical, and especially with the minority companies, and it, saved everybody. And it also gave us a way to go in. I didn't have to talk to Rich, didn't have to talk to CSO about this guy's not performing, or say, hey, you get off your tail and get your stuff over here to CSO. That it was straight talk. I always say that the project was actually completed early. The original target when we started in 99 was 05. Then 9/11 happened, obviously.
Right.
The airline has won 5 years, so they wanted to go to 10. So I say we actually opened a year and a half early, 08.
Yeah.
So, but it was under budget, and therefore a year, a year and a half early.
Right. What biggest lesson learned takeaway?
Biggest lesson learned, I think, it was a potential role. First of all, emphasis on local companies. And if I look at the progress that Indianapolis companies have made since then, and the confidence they've had, and it all has to do with, but it gave confidence, I think, to our local industry, local design and construction. But at BSA, it's a concept that I actually sort of worked at in all of our other clients, and that is essentially the executive architect. And we sort of did this on an IU job, but in a smaller way. They wanted to have a small firm do the project, a project that they couldn't do. So basically, we backed them up.
Mm-hmm.
It was not an associate architect. And the contract was not as an executive architect, but where you could come in and use your influence in a good way for your client and help out this other firm. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that should be done more. It's done a little bit more on the East Coast and some places with project. I think BSA would be the perfect executive architect for some mm-hmm. things. And you'd have to open your mind to say, and people said, did you design airports? I did not design the airport. They had a lot to do with it, but we had 106 consultants.
Right.
And they were designing,
one person, right?
They were designing yeah. their piece, and right. it was all put together. And going back to the 88%, the only part that, you know, Indiana didn't have is, you know, the Siemens baggage system,
mm-hmm.
you know, the fueling systems were companies from out of state. Those are the only things that that IBM did, the IT systems, so that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But everything that was hard out there, for the most part, was touched by Indiana. Even the steel came from a company that came out of northern Indiana.
My last question would be, you've flown out of there and you've seen, it's won numerous awards mm-hmm. every year for being one of the, what do you think when you're walking through the airport? You know, how does it make you feel?
I love driving up to it, obviously.
Yeah.
And the good part is, usually when you go back to a building you worked on, you think of things you would have changed or that you didn't like, or if you remember some problems on that building. It literally doesn't have any of those problems.
Yeah.
And they do such a good job of keeping it up. I mean, it's now just 17 years
yeah. old,
and you can't tell it.
No.
It's been refreshed, and that's if you know, all you have to do is go to another airport.
Yes.
And, you know, that's the, for me, it was so exciting because I did go to a lot of airports, and the good part was I got to travel a lot. I mean, these airport conferences, terminal planning, whatever it was, they would be all over the world. So I
right.
had a chance to go see a lot of places. And
did that influence some of your thoughts as you were putting together some of the
yeah,
personal?
Well, basically, I went to the one in New Orleans
yeah.
that became the basis. Literally, I wrote the first budget based on Detroit, where it was in process time. And Hunt was building Detroit. So I talked to the guys from Hunt as well, but they had their budget format. So I just copied it and then plugged things in and knew what the pieces were going to be, even the tower. You know, the tower was, I think it cost 40-something million. I had $50 million in there for a tower. It was like Mike Wells said, $50 million for a tower. But what's it going to take? It's the second tallest tower in the United States because of the third runway that's planned out there.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know, it was still the second tallest tower.
Right.
But I actually was pretty close to the final estimate in May, then we had escalated it.
Right.
Out into the future. And there were some scope changes. We increased the size of the garage just like they're doing now. I just couldn't stand building a big parking garage. And so I wasn't going to fight that fight. So, okay, we'll just increase the size of the garage, but we're going to have expansion plans. And we're about, you know, just really into the thing. And it was clear that the garage is too small. So we had a legitimate scope, but the garage makes more money than the airplanes. They make more money off that parking garage than they do off that turn. That was an easy financial plan. Baggage, well, obviously, the baggage system evolved with 9/11.
Right.
And the scanners and all that stuff had to be added. But those were all partially funded by the government, FAA, or Homeland Security, or somebody.
Right.
That gave them the money. But there was obviously some increase just in scope and belts and all that mm-hmm. stuff. It's a fascinating world down in there. What the behind those things, where that baggage system is, it's terrific. But that I think to learn, I think it's an attitude that this company can heighten and may be doing it now, is what our real presence is. And that part of it, too, is you have to swallow your ego because, you know, our name's not on the sign out there. And, was it fun? Did we make money? I mean, like I said, I think we built over about $25 million out there.
It had an impact. I mean, I feel like, you know, I've grown up here my whole life. Just the amount of different things that we've been able to get for the city since that airport was completed.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
We've had a Super Bowl. We've had All-Star games. And
big deal.
Yeah.
And they set up that Civic Plaza to show people what you can do and how you can handle it. It was one of the conferences I went to was they made a presentation about the Sydney Olympics and what it took to move And actually, we were able to integrate some of that. That's partially one of the driving forces between a big space is to handle people.
Yeah.
So they're not waiting outside in lines. They had pictures of Sydney the day after the Olympics closed. It was unbelievable lines of people waiting outside.
Outside, yeah.
But we can handle it other ways.
Yeah.
But no, it's no question about it. And obviously, it increased. BSA was always the quiet company because we lived in this niche.
Right.
That certainly created the presence of the city in our own city.
Very cool. Well, thanks for coming in. Thanks for talking to me about this. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank Don for joining me again on this episode of BSA by Design. You can connect with him on LinkedIn. If you want to learn more about BSA, we encourage you to visit our website at bsalifestructures.com. There's a link in the show notes to contact us for more information. There's also a link in the show notes to the Indianapolis International Airport project page on our website. Be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music so you don't miss an episode. We've got more content and project stories to share on social media, so be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and X. That will do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.